Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we have a guest, finally. I know we've been trying to do, since my illness, getting back to normal. So we have a first-time guest. Very excited to have a Daniele Mazzanti from Italy on to talk about Milan and some standout players in Serie A. That'll be at the end of the pod. We have some recent transfer updates that we'll get to. We have some game picks with our good friend Thousand Names. And of course, we have a patron-only part of the podcast. But before we get to all that, we still have somewhat of a Scudetto race. Juve struggled to draw against Sassuolo. Yesterday, we had Inter's decisive win against Spal. I don't think we can completely write off Atalanta, although for them, it's a little bit tough. So I'm joined by our dear friend, Alex Goldberg. Amazing how different things look for Inter. The past few episodes, we've been talking about them in crisis. I think at the start of the season, had you told Inter fans they would be 6 points away from Juve with 5 games to go, they would have absolutely taken that. They have the best defense in Serie A, the second best attack in Serie A. So things have really changed. So Alex, I know this is really crazy to say, but do you think there's any chance at this point that Juve doesn't win the Scudetto?
Well, yes, there is a chance. I mean, there is a chance. And I know that Inter are one ahead of Atalanta. Inter on 71 points, Atalanta on 70. So Atalanta are 7 back from Juve. Like, I even give Atalanta a chance. It would be nice to bet on, too. Not a lot of money and probably get a great return if it were to happen. Atalanta, let me just say, are just, and credit to you, you've been so consistent on them, at least from the Champions League angle of they're not a team you would want to draw at all. They'll punch you in the mouth, and anybody who was laughing that PSG got an easy situation probably should do a little bit more research on Atalanta. My boy, and I'm being absolutely sarcastic, but Mario Pasalic, who of course is no longer a Chelsea guy. I mean, man, does he look good at Atalanta. They are so good. But for them to overtake Juve, that's going to have to take really some just failing, some flopping from Juventus. Because 7 should be enough with, what, 5 remaining games for them? I will say, before I get to Inter, this Juve is the Juve that I think I joked with Claudio when we were doing a fill-in episode, David, that, you know what? There's still a little bit more dysfunction to come from Juve. Because at the moment when we were doing the pod, we were like, well, you know, could they just be now wrapping up Serie A almost easily? And I just still felt like there were a few more curveballs to come. And they can't put away games. And it does make you think, like, is this just pretty much the Juve we've seen all season, where Maurizio Sarri's got a lot of beautiful toys at his disposal, but how good of a team are they? Like, honestly, how good of a team are they? I still, though, give them major, major odds to wrap it up. I do, just because of the quality. And when you look at the schedule, you can play a lot of games in your head where you can try and convince yourself that maybe Inter or Atalanta do have their chances. I mean, Atalanta have a bunch of winnable games where you would expect they would punch some of these teams in the mouth. But let's be real. On paper, Juve is the best team. They are the best team. And they have a 6 and a 7 point cushion, which should be enough, David. It really, really should be. But hey, if you like to gamble and you like to do low risk, high reward bets, I would place some bets. Absolutely. But for me personally, meh, I still think Juve will wrap it up. But maybe it gets interesting and maybe it really becomes, as some people say, squeaky bum time down the final stretch, last couple games. So, David, that's my answer. And just what about you? And also, you know, I'm giving this, you can hear it in my voice, such lack of confidence in Sarri. And it's not all about Sarri. It's not all about Sarri. But considering where we are, also, what do you make of Sarri's first season overall?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's been a roller coaster with Sarri because, you know, good start against Parma at the beginning of the season. And we're like, oh, Ronaldo's going to score 40 goals this season. Then that didn't happen. Then they played poorly. Then before the pandemic broke, that great performance against Inter. Then they come back and they look pretty good for a little while. And we start seeing, we do see a little bit of Sarri ball here. And then they go against Atalanta and Sassuolo, two of the most red hot teams in Serie A. And they were lucky to even get those 2 points against those two teams. And those end up being really, really key. I mean, we might look back at that penalty kick on Muriel with that handball that, according to the rules, was a clear as day penalty as really the Scudetto decider. And yeah, I Sarri, so really up and down. I joke that, you know, to me, Allegri and Biden are having the same year in 2020 by doing nothing. They look absolutely great. Allegri, in comparison to how Sarri has managed down the stretch, looks like a genius. Biden against his opponent in this election has to just sit back and do nothing. So really similar. So Sarri, I do think I'd be shocked if Juve doesn't win the Scudetto. I actually think this weekend we could really see the end of it, because Inter travel at Roma. They're going to be without Barella and Sensi. Juve, you know, granted, this match against Lazio, and it's amazing how different we look at it, because we thought this was going to be a head-to-head match for the Scudetto. We know Lazio completely collapsed, so now Inter has to hope that Lazio can play spoiler. I think Juve also has the advantage of playing the day after Inter most of the way. So look, at this point, I'd be shocked, really, really shocked if Juve doesn't win it. But for Inter, they're going to look back and really, really regret it. I mean, what if Lukaku had taken the penalty kick against Bologna instead of giving it to Lautaro, who then missed it? Then they drop points in that match. So this was definitely a weak Juve. I definitely think Sarri deserves absolutely part of the blame. We know it wasn't a greatly designed team. We don't know really what their midfield should be still today. So, at least it makes Serie A interesting down the stretch. But I do think maybe this weekend we see the end of it. Roma is playing well. Let's see how Inter responds to that. So let's transition to some hot transfer topic, Alex. Let's talk about some of the recent transfer rumors. So what are we going to start off with, my friend?
All right, David, let's start off with a really interesting topic here. What are the odds Napoli get Victor Osimhen over the finish line? And also, David, are Napoli spending the Koulibaly money for Osimhen?
Yeah, so I know you're very high on this striker. Very interesting situation, because the Lille sporting director the other day was introducing another new addition, and he basically said it was a done deal with Napoli, that it was down to the final negotiations, the final details and whatnot. But we know he changed agents halfway through the negotiation, and that, to me, that's a big red flag. You add to that Napoli has the image rights thing, which is always a little bit interesting, which is usually an extra hurdle in the transfer. So look, you know, it looks like everything is set for Napoli to get this done, but the change in agent, and there's talk about that there's demands for higher salary and then commissions, and then there's other sites that are reporting this new agent is trying to see if there's interest from other clubs. But at this point, it looks like Napoli are in really good shape to sign him. As far, and I know a lot of people have asked, is this a sign? Because he is expensive. The reported deal is $60 million, including bonuses. Is Napoli spending the Koulibaly money? As far as I can tell, no. I mean, we've had Napoli Outsider on and pointed out that Napoli have a lot of players that they have out on loan with forced option to buy. Raj, Verdi, Inglesi, Chiriches, and there's other, and that's really a small war chest, which is really pretty close, if not the full Osimhen transfer fee. Now, does this mean that Koulibaly won't be sold? It doesn't, but I do think Napoli can acquire Osimhen regardless of Koulibaly staying or going, so good for them if they do it, and what an addition if they get it over the finish line. So I think it's kind of a little bit like the Juve Scudetto. I fully anticipated happening, just a little bit rockier than we thought it would be.
Well, like I said, I will really be a big Victor Osimhen fan. It won't fully put me over to Napoli. It's not like this has been actually one of my guys ahead of time, but I will look at them with a much keener eye for sure. Not that anyone really cares. All right, on to the next topic. Could you see Bernardeschi joining Napoli in a deal for Milik?
So this goes back to the image rights that I mentioned a second ago. What's interesting about this is, you know, Bernardeschi has his marketing with Roc Nation, with Jay-Z's agency. And I don't see, you know, him turning that over to Napoli in a potential deal. So I don't see that happening. The other name who's been mentioned more, and Milik really wants to go to Juve, and I think Napoli will probably play ball on a loan swap deal, is Luca Pellegrini, who's a very intriguing left back. And you could argue that Juve could really use him too. But, you know, he could be a long-term upgrade over Mario Rui. So at this point, I don't think Bernardeschi. I think Luca Pellegrini is much more likely than Bernardeschi being involved in this deal.
All right, David, next thing here. Who are the candidates to join Milan's front line next season?
Yeah, so while we're on the topic, I know last night Di Mazza tweeted that now Red Bull are asking for a buyout from Rangnick to let him out of the contract, and that caused all sorts of turbulations on Twitter. I saw some people turned it into, how did Milan not know that Rangnick has an exit clause? And that's just not right. It's not true that it's a clause. It's not uncommon that a manager who's under contract, who reaches an agreement with another deal, that at the last second, the other club's like, okay, you want to rescind our contract with us? We want compensation. So I do have kind of an issue with people saying that, how could Milan not know there was a clause? It's not a clause. It's just the cost of doing business. Really not that uncommon. But back to the question. For one, the big development is it looks almost certain that Rebic is staying. He's certainly earned it, played very well this season. He's on a 2-year loan deal. Milan's trying to see if they can buy him outright sooner. And the other two main names are Vlahovic on Fiorentina and Patrick Schick, who's done well in the Bundesliga this season. It doesn't sound like Ibra is coming back. I know there's been talk about Jovic from Real Madrid. But that would have to be on loan. And let's see what happens. We know Real Madrid yesterday, Florentino Perez said that they won't be making any big purchases. So good news for you with Havertz too, Alex. But I wonder if, you know, they'll just keep Jovic and try to groom him to potentially long-term replacement for Benzema.
Glad you mentioned my boy, who, I mean, God, if Messi didn't exist right now in La Liga, there maybe Sergio Ramos as well, but Benzema, hey, one quick sentence on Benzema. Yeah. Normally by 32, especially a player we've seen been playing for a top team for so long, over a decade really, you see someone at 32 falling off, he's getting better. I mean, he's literally getting better. So credit to him, and Ronaldo moved, and everybody, all of Benzema's doubters said, he kind of mooched off Ronaldo. He didn't really beat out Higuain because it's Ronaldo. So whatever, they stayed with what worked. Wrong. All right, on to the next subject. David, how much does Milan benefit from Sevilla redeeming Suso's rights?
You can make a case this is Monchi's best deal for a Serie A team. It only happens to benefit Milan this time. So once Sevilla clinched the Champions League spot, the option to buy Suso became binding. Milan's going to make a plusvalenza of over 20 million on this one between the loan and the option to buy. They had assigned Suso technically on a Bosman. They had paid Liverpool just a tiny bit to get him in early when they signed him years ago, but basically he's a Bosman signing. Huge plusvalenza, which Milan really hasn't done many in recent years. So very good development for them. In addition to that, they might save even more money because it sounds like Torino is going to hire Giampaolo to be their manager. He's under contract with Milan next season. So really, both are good news financially for Milan.
Okay, David. Last thing we're going to discuss here in this segment. Will Inter keep Alexis Sanchez next season? And what are the odds he's allowed to play in the Europa League?
Yeah, so the agreement so far between Inter and Man United is obviously that he can finish the Serie A season. He can play the single match against Getafe, but he's not, as of now, allowed to play in the Europa League. Inter's trying to work it out with Man United because they're on the different parts of the board in the Europa League. The only way they would play each other is in the final. So Inter's trying to tell Man United, okay, maybe we'll pay a penalty if we play Sanchez in the final and we face you. I can understand why Man United, you know, doesn't want to get the chance of Sanchez or Smalling, same with Roma, not allowing him to play in the Europa League. So I get their perspective, but since they can only play in the final, let's see what happens there. The other thing with Sanchez is he's been playing really well, and there's buzz that Inter wants to keep him. There was a quote from Marotta that said that, you know, we'll evaluate, but we know that we have to purchase him. And you can really read that one of two ways. You can read that either that he knows the only way Man United will let him stay at Inter next season is by buying him, not on loan, although I still think that's probably going to be the most likely outcome, or that they believe so much in Sanchez that they want to buy him. But regardless, I do think there's a lot of momentum for Sanchez to stay at Inter next season and to play in the Europa League. So now let's get to Thousand Names. He did grace us with some picks this weekend. As always, I tell you guys, take them maybe with a little bit of grain of salt, maybe try to have a good time with these. I'll read them both in English and Italian and make my picks as well. So first up, the big game between Roma and Inter on Sunday. Remember, 1,000 Names picked Inter to win the Scudetto when Calcio returned. 1,000 has Inter winning 1-0, goal by De Vrij. The comment is, the former symbol for Lazio wins the derby, giving the Scudetto dream to Conte and Marotta. He said Zeko and Mkhitaryan are embarrassing in this game and that Fonseca is heading towards a sack at the end of the season. In Italian, Roma-Inter 0-1 De Vrij. L'ex simbolo della Lazio vince il derby regalando il sogno scudetto a Conte Marotta. Zeko e Mkhitaryan imbarazzante. Fonseca verso l'esonero a fine stagione. I'm going to go with a draw. Roma's been playing pretty well. I'm going to go 1-1, and I'll go Zaniolo, Lukaku, who I think is going to play in this match. Next up, big game for the race to avoid relegation. Huge match. Genoa hosting Lecce. 1,000 Names has Crescito scoring. The comment is, one more ridiculous penalty given to Genoa to help him avoid relegation. He said Lecce coach Liberani is too fat to coach at the highest level because a manager has to set the right example for the team, and that President Preziosi always wins in these situations. In Italian, Genoa Lecce 1-0, Crescito, l'ennesimo rigorino al Genoa, chiude la lotta per la retrocessione. Liverani troppo grasso per allenare ad alti livelli, un allenatore deve dare l'esempio per la squadra, vince sempre Preziosi. I'm gonna agree Genoa wins, but not in a controversial fashion. I'm going to give a goal to Pandev, who's been carrying the team through this. Last pick, big game on Monday, Juve hosting Lazio. 1,000 has it 1-1. Higuain and Immobile. He says at the end of the match, Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be in tears, calling Jorge Mendes, asking for Sarri to be sacked. And he said that Sarri made him lose two finals in a year and made him waste a year, and that Lotito's really going to enjoy this scene. In Italian, Juve Lazio 1-1, Higuain Immobile, Cristiano Ronaldo in lacrime, chiama Jorge Mendes e chiede l'esonero di Sarri, gli ha fatto perdere un anno e due finali, Lotito gode. I'm going to go with a Juve win. I always say a big difference between Juve and the other teams is they usually do not botch three games in a row. Not great against Atalanta and Sassuolo. Lazio's reeling. I'm going to go Juve 2-0, although their defense with De Ligt shoulder is a little bit questionable, but I'm going to go Ronaldo Dybala here. So before we get to Daniele Mazzanti, which is going to be available to all, we're going to do a patron part of the podcast. During this month, I'm going to be honest, we are going to be transitioning more and more stuff to Patreon. Eventually, we'll have one episode a week available to all and one on Patreon. This week, we had an extra bonus interview with Enrico Passarella. So if you do enjoy Calcio Land, I do recommend, you know, becoming a patron. It's not expensive. You get a lot more content on the podcast. You also can get articles as well. and you get to ask us questions, which is what we'll do in the next segment. So I'm very excited to welcome a first-time guest. We had to take a little break, and I wanted to come back with a bang with a guest. I could have gone with a route with someone that I knew well, but I've been wanting to bring on Daniele Mazzanti, who's about to come on the podcast for quite some time. He's one of my favorite calcio connoisseurs in Italy. His bio, I love it, says con l'arroganza di chi ne sa, which means with the arrogance of someone who knows things. And he really backs it up. Normally, something like that, I'd be like, but Daniele absolutely backs it up. Calcio knowledge, like very few that I've come across. He's also one of the hosts of a fantastic podcast that I've been listening to this week in Italy, Vox to Box. And so today we're going to have Daniele to talk a little bit about Milan, which I know he's really passionate about. But we're also going to talk about some players because he has a keen eye for talent in Serie A. So with that long introduction out of the way, Daniele, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Calcioland. Benvenuto.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me. I'm honored, really honored. And I'd say I'm a bit nervous about it, but I'm really honored to be your guest. And thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, don't be nervous because we are talking about things you know really well. So Daniele, let's yes. start here. Let's just talk a little bit about you, because I've been following you for a while. I know you really know your calcio. So give us a little bit your history as a calcio fan, how you got into calcio, and how you've been following it over the years.
Well, for me, it was like a sort of family thing, because both my parents are calcio fans, are AC Milan fans. So also, both of my grandparents were AC Milan fans. So for me, the choice has been like a family thing. So
yeah,
I was born red and black, and since I was like 7, I started to follow calcio every single day. Here in Italy, you know better than me, calcio is like, it's not a sport, it's a religion.
Yeah.
And so my creed for AC Milan, was like a natural thing for me. And, I started to follow, calcio and, AC Milan back in 1994, because I was born in 1987. So, I missed the sucky part,
yeah.
Of the sucky part. So I didn't watch live players like the Dutch trio or that AC Milan. And my first favorite player was George Weah, because I loved him. I really loved him. And, of course, Paolo Maldini, for me, is my captain, but just because I was too young to follow Franco Baresi, I'd say. And, for me and for my family, AC Milan is like a pillar of our lives. And then from AC Milan, I started to follow the whole culture, the whole Serie A. And then the whole football everywhere, like in every single part of the world. And so my life was built around the AC Milan. Like I started with George Weah, then I have Andriy Shevchenko as a favorite player, and of course Rino Gattuso, of course Sandro Nesta, of course Andrea Pirlo, and for me it's like a sort of scar in my heart. the Pirlo thing is like a scar in my heart, and because I love him so much, and then the last was Kaká. I think that right now it's not easy to fall in love for an AC Milan player.
Yeah.
Probably a kid could enjoy Zlatan, but this is just a shadow of the real Zlatan that we know.
So yeah, no.
I think that it wouldn't be easy to be an AC Milan fan right now if you are like 6 or 7 years old. You have to be like, you have to have faith in the future, because right now it's not easy, I'd say.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And I know you often go to San Siro and you're really, really involved with that. So great stuff. So you already mentioned some Milan players that you enjoyed growing up. I'm a little bit older than you. The Sacchi years were unbelievable. But yeah, after that, you've certainly had a lot of really good ones. So let's talk a little bit about Gattuso. Now, I sent you the question saying that he was doing so well at Napoli before the bad game against Bologna, but I still think it's safe to say Gattuso has exceeded expectations at Napoli. So I know he was one of your favorite players, and I think in retrospect, we can say that last season at Milan, he did maybe better than we thought based on what happened after. So are you surprised that Gattuso is turning into being such a good coach? I mean, I'm assuming you think he's doing a pretty good job too.
Yeah, I'm surprised, but not so surprised, because I think that the main thing about Gattuso is that he was a really great player from my point of view, but he's a even bigger man. Like, he's one of the purest men you can find in the culture right now. He's really genuine. It's like, he's a real man, I'd say. And I think that last year he made a sort of, he made a great job with AC Milan, and AC Milan fans didn't realize how good was the job of Gattuso, because, The last year, AC Milan didn't play well. We can see, I think. But probably the main reason was that AC Milan didn't have really good players to play in a proper way, I'd say.
Yeah.
And even this year, the first matches of Gattuso's Napoli weren't so good. Talking about the beauty of the game. But there is a reason for this, and the reason is that he tried to fix the defensive side of the team, because you remember how bad was Napoli with Ancelotti at the start of the season, and in the middle of the season they had like sort of the player boycott the club, like it was crazy. And if you think about this, what Gattuso is doing right now is a sort of masterpiece. And I say Napoli is playing well. It's not like the Sarri's Napoli that was a beauty. I didn't say that was a beauty.
Yeah.
But it's a nice team with really good players. And I think that Gattuso is really young, both as a man and as a coach. And I think that in the future, he can like sort of develop his game in a better and proper way, talking about the beauty of the football. But he's really effective. He won an Italy Cup, Coppa Italia.
Yeah.
And last year, he took the AC Milan 1 point to Champions League.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And so I think go ahead.
No. Please, I finished.
I was just going to say, I think you make a great point that it's his leadership as a man and the quality as a person, especially with Napoli having a mutiny boycott, and he really reunited that team. And I agree with you. He's also is developing tactically and whatnot. So very well said there. So I want to ask you about Milan, because obviously right now things under Pioli are going rather well now. I'd say Milan has been as good as, you know, maybe after Atalanta, and the best team since Calcio came back with Sassuolo right behind them. So the team's actually going in the right direction. But we know Ragnic is coming. And I know you're a connoisseur of not just Italian football, but football in general. So I want to ask you what you make about Milan making decision, because we have seen that sometimes it is fair to say that foreign coaches coming to Serie A can be a little bit of a mixed bag. So tell me in general how you feel about Milan going in this direction. Are you optimistic about it overall?
So yes, I am. Like I'm optimistic. Like by nature, I'm optimistic. But in this specific thing, I'm optimistic because Ragnik means project. Like they want to have a project, a direction, follow. And I'm optimistic about it. And my only concern is what you were talking about. So the a foreign coach in Italy, it could be really hard for him. I remember well how the press, the televisions, what they did with Frank de Boer. Like Frank de Boer was that was a mess. Like, okay, the Inter of Frank de Boer was like not really good, we have to say, but they treat him like a stupid. Like, what are you doing here? Go back. We don't want you. And this is the only fear that I have, because right now you can see on every newspaper, every television, there's a sort of pro Pioli committee that is growing day by day. And I think that Pioli is doing a really good job, but we have to realize that everything that is happening right now is unique, is a thing that you have to be like, hey, don't take this like a sure thing, because teams are playing like every 3 days. The shape of the players is different. The situation is different, and I hope unique in the history of the game. So even beat Juventus 4-2. Okay, it's a great thing from an AC Milan fan's perspective, but in a normal tournament, we know that that game was not an option in a normal Serie A. So yeah. I praise Pioli for what he's doing, but I think that we need a project to reach that Champions League spot that we are looking for, like from 5 years ago to now, like a sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because, you know, I think Milan does need some stability. And, you know, if they were replacing Pioli, I'm just going to throw out De Zerbi or Juric. To me, that I don't know if that's worth it, but a project like Ragnic, and, you know, Milan does have to get, for lack of better words, into player trading, get better financially. It makes perfect sense for me. But I really appreciate you providing the perspective in Italy, because it's not easy for a foreign manager, especially one who gets who's been hyped as much as Ragnic. Yeah. You know, in Italy, people get a little bit resentful of that stuff. So very well said there. So let's shift gears a little bit, Daniele. Let's talk about some players. And let's start with Milinkovic-Savic. And the reason I want to start with him is you are actually a few weeks ahead of me on the Milinkovic-Savic hype train. I have to give you credit. You know, a lot of people, you know, I've been talking about him well before he broke out. Like, my first podcast was 3.5 years ago, even before he had his great season. We were talking about him, but I know you were one step ahead of me appreciating Milinkovic-Savic. So tell me a little bit about the first time you saw him and you were like, huh, this guy is legit. And what about him do you like as a player?
I think that the first time that I seen Milinkovic-Savic play was, I saw that, okay, that is a unicorn.
Yeah.
Like, it's a unicorn because, you remember the first time NBA fans, seen like Kristaps Porzingis playing, like, two meters and 30 players who shot from trees. And my thing with Milinkovic-Savic was the same, because I saw like a big man with the feet, with the control of the ball, with the techniques of a small attacking midfielder from Serbia, but in the body of a tank. So I say, okay, that is a unicorn, and I like unicorn. So
yeah,
I start following his game, and well, I think that he needs to go in another team, because he's doing really well, because the system made up by Simone Inzaghi is perfect for him right now.
Yeah.
He's not an attacking midfielder anymore. He's like sort of midfielder, like a mezzala. And this strange and weird, beautiful system of Lazio is perfect for him. But he needs to go in another team, because he has to do the last step in being one of the best midfielder in the world. And
yeah,
I think that since he stays there in his comfort zone in Lazio, I think that maybe we can miss his top level.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So now let's talk. I asked you what other players you wanted to talk about, and you mentioned two that are really, really great shouts. I know you recently tweeted about Amrabat, how some people had finally noticed him. Here we are in July after 30 games. He's been absolutely kicking ass at Verona.
Yeah.
I think Fiorentina hit a home run signing him for that fee early on. I think Amrabat's been one of the most intriguing players this season. So tell us a little bit about Amrabat, what you like about him, and how you would describe him to someone who's maybe never seen him before.
So I think that Amrabat is the rookie of the year of Serie A, talking about the player who nobody knows before. Because, of course, also Theo Hernandez is a rookie, but Theo Hernandez used to play in Real Madrid. You knew how Theo Hernandez, you can know how Theo Hernandez played. But Amrabat was like, this is like an exploit. So he's a proper rookie of the year of Serie A, is a rookie, like his teammates Kumbulla and Ramani, who did
yeah,
a huge, huge season. But Amrabat, I think he's one of the best, right now, one of the best defensive midfielder you can find in Serie A. In Fiorentina bought him in January for 20 million, I'd say. And that was a really, really good choice from Fiorentina, because he's a really... He's a big man, like he's 185 centimeters tall, He's a big man, but with great skills, talking about how he can think football, and how fast he can think football. He's not a skilled player like, I don't know, Juan Sebastian Verón, who is the first comparison I thought when I see Amrabat. But I think that this was because they are bold, they are both bold and the defensive mid player, but Amrabat is not skilled as Juan Sebastian Verón. He remembers me another bold player like Cambiasso in a certain way. I talked with my fellows on Box to Box about this, and there was who said Cambiasso, who said Sergio Almirón before Juventus. Do you remember Almirón?
Oh, yeah.
Almirón before Juventus. He was a Spanish player. He was a super player, and I think the comparison is pretty good because both are like, I don't know if in English is a proper thing, but like their geometry, like they know where to pass the ball in the perfect moment and in the perfect way. They are not like like Pirlo, of course. Well, Pirlo is unique. Pirlo had this long ball, perfect long ball that I think I never seen in any other player who played in this position. But Amrabat is really good, and he's also really good on the defensive side. He's not just a creator of game and plays, etc. He's really good also on the defensive side. So really good sign for Fiorentina. And I think that maybe also Amrabat had the connection with a sort of Premier League teams, but I'm not sure about it. I think if he played just in Holland and not in Premier League. So, because I was thinking that he's a perfect player, I think, for Premier League. And probably the next step of his career after the Fiorentina would be the Premier League, because for me, it's perfect for their game.
Yeah. So I sense a pattern. You like players that can do a lot of things, and I agree. Amrabat definitely has that versatility. And also just the style and the flair, the way he wears his socks and everything. This really stands out. I really dig that too. Okay, so one more player you wanted to talk about. He's a little bit more, I would say, uniquely dimensional, but really, really exciting. And I have to say, I think he'd be perfect for this Milan, if you ask me. Yeah. And this is Jeremy Boga on Sassuolo, who's been devastating this season. So tell me a little bit, what do you like about Boga? How good do you think he can become? I think he can be at like a Douglas Costa, only Douglas Costa, if he could stay healthy, maybe even better. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what you like about Boga and what he can become someday.
I think that Serie A have a problem with players who are really, really fast. Like, I remember the impact that De Olofeu had in Serie A when he came to AC Milan. And De Olofeu was like one of the fastest players I ever seen here in Italy. And he was super strong for AC Milan because he destroyed a lot of defense in Serie A. And Boga is really fast, but he's super, super skilled. And I think that for AC Milan will be like perfect. I think that just the design of it, of Jeremy Boga, could be a thing that could take AC Milan from 7th, 6th spot, fight for the 4th, because he's what AC Milan need, like someone who can change the pace of the game and change the sort of the game, because he's super fast, super skilled. I don't know how to say in English the fumoso thing. It's like maybe he wants.
Yeah, he leaves a trail of smoke. He's so fast that
yeah,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, perfect, smoky. Yeah, it's like fumoso. It's perfect. Yeah, and I think that I don't know. Talking about Premier League club, I don't know why Chelsea let him go so easy.
Yeah.
I really don't know, and I think that Premier League teams didn't watch the Serie A, and I remember what Arsenal did with Bennacer.
Yeah, like, it's the same thing. Yeah, I've said that many times. You're completely right. They could have had him for cheap, and they didn't. Same with Chelsea. That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, and I don't know why, because they have these jewels, and yeah, we don't want him. Yeah, let's go, no problem. Like Boga, okay, right now I don't think he is like ready to be the star in the Chelsea team right now, because of course Chelsea is one of the biggest teams in Europe. They are buying every single player in the world. but I think that Chelsea, Boga is good enough to play as a sub in Chelsea, and I don't know why they let him go so easily, because he's a really good player, and I just hope AC Milan could sign him, and let's see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Daniele, you were really, really awesome. I think you've absolutely lived up to the claim in your bio, because you definitely live up to that. So I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, Vox to Box, which is in Italian. And a lot of times people ask me, you know, I want to get better with my Italian. I want to listen to authentic calcio. And I've been listening to it this week. It's really fantastic. You guys are incredibly knowledgeable, but it's also really funny. You know, I grew up in Italy. I grew up with the Jalapas band. It reminds me vaguely a little bit about that. It's got that vibe to it, a little bit of fun. But you guys really know what you are talking about. So tell our listeners a little bit about Vox to Box.
Thank you very much, because I'm honored about the Jalapas comparison, because trust me, they are my heroes.
Yeah.
And Box to Box is, we started Box to Box like 4 years ago. This is the fourth season. And we started with a mission. And the mission is to talk properly about football, using our knowledge, and try to go deep inside the main theme of the Serie A and the European football, not just Serie A, but mainly Serie A. And, but trying to do this in the way we are funny people. Like we love to have a laugh, and, we love to kidding and joking, et cetera. So we decided to talk about football in our way, and we want to talk properly about football. That was the goal, because we saw on TV and also on Twitter and socials, etc. The Italian press was not focused on the main thing, like the tactical aspect of Serie A is not analyzed by TV shows, etc. They prefer to talk about the penalty or the bar or stuff like that, etc. We decided to talk about football, like proper football. Like we want to. I remember like 3 years ago, the Benevento was in Serie A. Then De Zerbi took Benevento, and we started to talk about De Zerbi's Benevento and De Zerbi's way of football before anyone else, because we have one of my fellows. He's a crazy guy because he really loves football, and he watch like every single game he can, from South America to Italy to Europe, etc., etc. The only pity is that he is an Inter fan, so nobody's perfect. You know, nobody's perfect. but he started to watch Benevento's game and to talk about Benevento. And when like 3 months later on TV, we saw someone who told us about who was talking about the construction from the low side from the defense by the Derby's Benevento. We were there like, okay, we talked about this like 3 months ago, and it's not new for now, because we decided that the main thing is football. It's just football. It's calcio, the main thing. And then around the football, we build up something like we have a quiz inside in our group, like one against another. We have to discover the player based on some words or games or teammates, etc., etc. So we have this thing that is called Momento Maioli, where Maioli is one of my fellows.
He's awesome.
Like the he's the best account. He's the best account in Italy. I think he's the best account in Italy because he's going crazy for every aspect, every strange and weird aspect around the football you can find. Like right now, his passion is about football mascots. we had him like talking about mascots for like 10 minutes. And we were like hypnotized, like, wow. we didn't realize how mascot could be so great, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to listen 7-8 guys talking about football every single week, we are Box to Box, and you can find us everywhere, basically everywhere.
Absolutely. No, it's awesome. So, Daniele, not only were you ahead of me on the Milinkovic-Savic, you guys were ahead of me on the Zerbi. So, Daniele and his crew absolutely know what they're talking about. Daniele, I think your professoressa d'inglese would give you an 8.5 today. You did really, really well for English. Fantastic job on your first appearance of what I hope is of many on Calcioland. Everyone definitely follow Daniele on Twitter. Check out the podcast. And thank you so much for coming on today, amico. It really was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Really, it's an honor for me. So let's hope for the future. I hope to come back and thank you again.